So tonight, we're going to be looking at 12 and 13, and we look at the seven significant signs. Of course, that'll go through chapter 14, so we won't get to all of it till next week. This is the third interlude in the book, and so I also think that tonight's is probably the most controversial. And when it's controversial, I generally do not make definitive statements, because there's so many different interpretations of this section. But first of all, we're going to look at the woman who gives birth, and that's in verses 1 and 2. And a great sign appeared in heaven, and a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth. Now, this woman's described in three ways. She's clothed with the sun, she has the moon under her feet, and she wears 12 stars on her head. And rather than me trying to make a definitive statement on this, I have an idea of what this represents, but these are the different interpretations. It could refer to Mary, the mother of Jesus. Some theologians, and I'll go as slow as I can so you can write these different positions down. Some say it's the mother of Jesus. Some say it's the church. And by the way, not all these are right. So it could be the ideal Jerusalem or the all true people of God that come from Christ and those after. And fourth, it could represent Israel, the holy people of God, and that's based on Genesis 37, 9 through 11. If I had to pick between one of those, I would actually vacillate between probably it represents Israel, or it could refer to the mother of Jesus. And if I had to pick between one of those two, I would probably say it represents Israel because of the situation that we've already gone through with this book. Okay, so now in verses 3 and 4, so this woman's obviously in pain. And now there's a red dragon that comes in verses 3 through 6. In verse 3, another sign appeared in heaven. Now this sign's taking place in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with seven heads and 10 horns, and on his head 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And a dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. Now, some scholars see that as a reference to the virgin birth of Christ. Because this is an interlude, we're not really sure if this is real time happening in this, or he is referring to a past event. So anyway, you have this dragon who comes on the scene now, and his tail sweeps down a third of what we would say, well, a third of the stars of heaven. And this dragon is described several ways. First of all, he has seven heads, which would represent some type of completeness based on the numbers that we've used before. He has 10 horns, which symbolizes some type of great power. Some see this as the kings of Daniel in Daniel 7:24. You can reference that. He is wearing 7 crowns, which is symbolic of authority and rule and dominion. And in verse 4, you see that he has a lot of power. His tail swept down a third of the stars. A third of the stars from heaven, some say these represent angels. I don't think the context dictates that. I think these are demonic. But anyway, his aim is to destroy this child. And now in verses 5 and 6, we look at, we're still looking at the red dragon. We see the birth of this child. We note the purpose. In 5, it says, she gave birth to a male child. This is where some of them believe this is Jesus. But if this is Jesus, then this obviously isn't an end-time prophecy. This is something that took place in the past, at the day that Christ was born in Bethlehem. One who is to rule the nations with a rod of iron, but her child was caught up to God. Now, theologians that hold that this represents Jesus Christ believe that this is not the return of Christ, but the ascension of Christ after his crucifixion. That's where they kind of lean in this direction. To his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared for her by God, in which she was to be nourished for 1,260 days, which is exactly 3.5 months. You can cross-reference this with Matthew 24:16, and there's several ways to interpret this. This fleeing, this woman going in for this 3.5 months, or 3.5 years, excuse me. It could have been early Jewish people escaping the Roman destruction of Jerusalem. It could have been a portion of the Jews saved during the tribulation period. I'm still of the opinion, personally, that the 144,000 in chapter 7 is really a reference to the nation of Israel. And like I said, I stand to be wrong on this. I mean, I could be wrong on it. But anyway, this desert represents a hiddenness, a place where they will not be persecuted. Anyway, that's what some of the scholars look at this. Now we look at Satan cast from heaven. Did I do that already? Okay, so Satan is thrown down from heaven. I'm getting ahead of my notes. Now war arose in heaven, and this is where I say we can't. I think it's safe when we talk about angels and we talk about those things that aren't designated, it's not good to guess. This is where we don't have to guess. Notice this. Now war arose in heaven. So there's some type of celestial fight going on. Michael, well, I guess that's the Archangel Michael, and his angels fighting against the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought back. Now, this is where some theologians believe, and it even gets muddier when you go this route, but this is where they believe Satan tried to take over the kingdom, and where there was this big fight, and Satan was thrown down. But the problem is, if that's the case, then we've already had this dragon that was up in heaven knocking down a third of the stars, and they cast them to earth. So there's a problem in interpreting that way. So anyway, there's this fight going on, but he was defeated and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, and the ancient serpent. Now that's Satan, who is also called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Of course, that narrative now, if you don't go with what went before it as definitive, then you could arrive at the fact that the author has now gone back to when Satan tried to take over the kingdom. It could make sense in that realm, but the time frame on this is very tricky, and most scholars say, please take it, you know, in small doses. Don't try to read into it too much. But anyway, this war fought in heaven. You notice there's two forces here. Michael and the angels, Satan and the fallen angels. We see the outcome of this war in 8 and 9. Satan is defeated. Satan is thrown out of heaven along with his forces. And they were thrown down with him. So now, in 10 and 11, we see this victory. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. So see, now we're kind of like looking forward again. So it gets kind of, I think, muddy here. And the authority of his Christ has come, for the accuser of our brothers has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. So here you see that this salvation and power and the kingdom has all come. Obviously, this is a victory celebration. And in verse 10, more importantly, Satan can no longer accuse believers before God. That power has now been mooted. It's been taken away. Now, the weapons used in verse 11 is very interesting. And they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb. Now, we know that the Lamb represents who? Jesus. That's Jesus Christ. By the word of their testimony, for their love, not their lives, even unto death. So here you have the blood of the Lamb, which is Jesus, the believer's testimony, that is the proclamation of the word, and the believer's loyalty, those that will be killed. However, at the end of this section, of this casting Satan from heaven, at the end of it, there's a warning to the earth. Notice verse 12. Now, there's this victory celebration going on. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. So there's a big party going on. Satan and his forces have been beaten by Michael and the angelic realm. But woe, this is key here, but woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down in you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. So here you have this, you have Satan and his angels who have been kicked out of heaven, and to put it pretty bluntly, they're ticked off when they hit the earth. They're not happy that they lost, plus they know that their time is short. He becomes angry, and in a sense, I think, fulfills what the scripture says about Satan, that he roams the earth seeking whom he may devour. So here you have this scenario. Now, was this, again, this becomes a, depending on how you view this, was this going back to when God kicked Satan out of the kingdom before? Or is this something that takes place now? In the chronological events of things, it would seem to fit that this refers to a future event, my take. But anyway, the dragon now begins to attack this woman who I believe, if we're talking about future events, I believe probably is the nation of Israel, the 144,000 that are going to be saved during this period. Anyway, 13 through 17, this woman flees. And when the dragon saw that he had been thrown down to earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. But the woman who, and again, some scholars see this as a reference to Jesus, but I just don't know how they get that. But the woman was given two wings of the great eagle so that she may fly from the serpent in the wilderness to a place where she is to be nourished for a time, times, and times, and a half. Now, this times, and a half, I would probably see this as the 3.5 years now of the Great Tribulation that's getting ready to take place. In other words, it takes exactly at the halfway point. You can also reference Daniel 7:25, Daniel 12:7 too. But anyway, this woman flees to escape persecution. By the way, some scholars believe, and I thought it was noteworthy, some scholars believe that the site would be Petra, and that's south of the Dead Sea, and would be a good place for them to hide. Anyway, verse 14, now in verse 14, there's a great deliverance for this woman. Notice, but the woman was given two wings of a great eagle so that she might fly from the serpent. In other words, God was protecting her to a place where she would be nourished, and she would stay there for 3.5 years. And I think that corresponds to the protection. Again, if you go back to Revelation chapter 7, you can look at the 144,000. But now something interesting happens in verse 15. So the serpent sees all of this taking place, and we basically believe the certain serpent to be Satan. That's pretty secure. He sees all this happening, and he decides that he's going to try to flood them out. Now notice in verse 15, the serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away with the flood. So he's trying to drown these people. It's kind of, I don't know, when I was studying this, it kind of took me back to when God parted the Red Sea and the people went through, but he flooded Pharaoh. It's kind of like this serpent's trying to mock God. And when we get to chapter 13, it becomes more apparent, I think. But notice what happens. But the earth came to her help. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river that the dragon had poured from his mouth. If you're very familiar with that area, it's very hard to flood. It's a very hard area to flood. But this picture here is where the earth actually opens up. It's like God is saying, you do not have power over this. I will stop you. And so there is this counterattack, if you will, by God, or evasive attack by God, where that river is now swallowed up that poured from the dragon's mouth. Then the dragon became furious with the woman and went off to make war on the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. Now, it's possible, and I've said this all along, even though I think that this is a reference strictly to the nation of Israel, it is quite possible that there are Gentiles in this group. Because those who keep to the commandments of God, we always think of the nation of Israel. But then he says here, hold to the testimony of Jesus, and he stood on the sand of the sea. So here you have this this serpent begins to attack, and he's furious. He can't get a hold of the woman. So now this serpent turns his attention to the other ones that are left. And again, going back to my thought on this is it's quite possibly those 144,000 that were sealed that is in this group that is unable to be reached. That Satan cannot get. So in chapter 13, we're going to see basically two beasts. It seems like we get on some more solid footing, at least we have two beasts coming out of here. Actually, the beast comes out of the sea in verse 13, and I saw a beast rising out of the sea. Now, this could be a reference to Daniel 7, 7 through 8. I think this is a political figure. I also think that this is a Gentile, because the sea was often at least thought of as Gentile when it came to imagery and things like that. But it's probably, and some see this as a rebuilt or a renewed Roman Empire. Maybe your book talked about that. But anyway, this beast comes out of the sea, and he has 10 horns and 7 heads and 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. So here he has 10 horns, which is obviously a sign of authority. And probably a political, if I had to guess, it would probably be a political authority. Some type of royalty because of the 10 crowns. And that's kind of why I'm kind of leaning that way. But there's blasphemous names on his head. And then he's multifaceted. Look at verse 2. And I saw this beast, he was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's. Its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it, the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. So here this beast looks like different animals. And, you know, that's perplexing in and of itself. Some see this possibly as a new Roman Empire that's going to rise and create havoc. And actually, I went back and looked this up. Nero, who was a horrific emperor to the Gentiles and to the Christians, he actually committed suicide June 9th, 68 A.D., Scholars that hold to this view believe it's a reincarnated Nero. Where they get this from, I don't know. Probably from the book of Daniel. There's a beast in, actually, I can give you the scriptures right here. You can log them in. This is in Daniel 6. He's described as a leopard. Daniel 7:6. Daniel 7:5, he has feet like a bear. And Daniel 7:4, he has a mouth like a lion. And they see this as a new reincarnated Nero, which that's an interesting take. And over the years, I wrote down some of these. Some people believe that this was Hitler. Some scholars believed it was Stalin. And the list goes on and on. But the result is very clear. Look at verse 3. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound. This is where they believe it's a reincarnated Nero. But its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as it followed the beast. It, to me personally, it can't be a reincarnated Nero because it's not. I don't think it's a reference to it. And when we go on, we're going to find out something else in just a few minutes. But the goal of all of this was that they worshiped this beast. And notice, and they worshiped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who can fight against it?" So here you have this beast of the sea is basically now being worshiped by the people where the dragon gave authority to. Now, if we go back to the interpretation of the last chapter, you can see how they see this as historical events going through. But again, it's a tough call. In 5 through 8, now we see the power of this beast. The beast was given a mouth uttering haughty, blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. Okay, so we have 42 months, and I think that is 3.5 years, right? Is that right? It's 3.5 years. I figured Jason would be able to help us out on that. He's quick at that calculation stuff. 3.5 years. 42 months. Is that 3.5 years? Is that what? Evans already got it. Yeah, it's good. It opened its mouth and uttered blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that those who dwell on the earth. And so here you see that this, he will utter profound words, it'll blaspheme, he will verbally attack God. So this, for 3.5 years. Now the question is this when he sets himself up in the temple of God that we read in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2? That's an interesting thought. But anyway, this beast is going to be worshipped, and he's been given authority by the red dragon, or by the dragon that gave him his power in verse 2. So anyway, verses 7 through 8 now, we see that he will destroy God's people. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And the Greek word there for conquered means to destroy physically, or in other words, to kill them. He will rule the, let me go back and read this here. And authority was given over it, over every tribe and people and language and nation. So, me personally, I see this more as a political leader who comes on the scene. He's given authority over everything. Maybe it'll be a molding of power. And all who dwell on the earth will worship it. Now there's a very perplexing statement here. Everyone's name who has not been written before the foundations of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundations of the world. And this goes back to Ephesians chapter 1, where we get the famous, he foreknew you before the foundations of the world, the creations of the world. And I think this fits very well in the Calvinistic theme that God has written your name before. But I don't think it means that. I think that God knew who was going to be saved. Those names were written down. And so this attack, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. He's saying to Christians now, he's turning his attention, John's turning his attention to Christians. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. I think it's a direct command to those who are believers. If anyone is slain with the sword, it is with the sword he must be slain. And then he adds something here. Here is a call for endurance and faith of the saints. So I think this political leader will get violent. He will attack Christians. And here you have this scenario of the first beast, but they're not done. There's a second beast that comes along now. And so here you have the beast of the sea, and now you have the beast of the earth in 11 through 18. And I think we're back into the future here, having jumped from chapter 12 to whatever that was to chapter 13. Anyway, I see this beast more of a false prophet. Now notice that this beast is introduced in verses 11, 12, and 13. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And I'm not sure how a dragon speaks, but he speaks like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose mortal wound was healed. So here you have this beast comes from the earth and he seems to support the first beast. There seems to almost be a religious aspect to this. So here you have a political, but now the political is now being moved into the realm of religious, because this beast is going to do some signs. Notice verse 13. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven in front of the people. In other words, it's a false religion. People start thinking, wow, this is God. This looks like something God would do. And by signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on the earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. Okay, so some scholars believe that this is where they're going to erect a temple to a statue of this beast inside the temple when Satan sets up his temple, and that's in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And there's all these deceptive signs going on. A lot of scholars believe that that's probably it, and I might be probably be more inclined to agree with that. And it was allowed to give breath. Now, this is interesting. It was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast, to be slain. Okay, I made a note here that one scholar basically said that he gives the appearance of making this dead person speak. In other words, it makes it look like the second beast brings it back to life. But in actuality, he cannot bring it back to life. And I think that makes really good sense. It's the deception. Only God can bring something back from the dead. This is a very deceptive religion that gives the appearance of being able to bring people back to life, to make these images speak, to do these things, to call fire from heaven. I think what's happening here, there's going to be a political movement that will be killed, but it will be resurrected in form of a religious movement. But it'll be a false movement. And again, I probably would stand to say that I could be wrong. But anyway, it deceives mankind, and mankind will build this image. Now, he makes this first beast seem to be alive. And then he forces, notice verse 16, also it causes both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or on the forehead. So, these people are going to be deceived by this image that somehow moves and is able to breathe again. And this is going to cause people to want to take a mark on their right hand, which oftentimes in Scripture is a sign of fellowship, or on the forehead, which would show ownership. Now notice what happens if you don't take the mark of the beast. Look at verse 17. So that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark. That is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. In other words, if you're a Christian during that time and you refuse to take the mark of the beast, and it's not on your head and it's not in your hand, guess what's going to happen to you? You're going to starve. You're not going to be able to buy stuff. You can't buy or sell. You, if you make goods during that time, you're not going to be able to do it. You have to have the mark of the beast. Now, the final to all this, and I've got some interesting numbers to give you. We can play with it if you want. But verse 18, we're trying to get, we're right at 7 o'clock, and I'm trying to get, we can talk afterwards. That's fine. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding, and I think this applies to those that are alive during this time. He says, you need wisdom. This is what you do. Calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Now, I went back and looked at a couple of other manuscripts, and some of the other manuscripts have 616. That was interesting. If you go back and you study, 6 is less than the perfect number 7. And is generally a reference to man when you think of the number 6. Man will work for how many days? 6. And then on the 7th, the perfect day, he will rest. And so a lot of these things are associated with man. And he basically says here that it's calculated with man. So anyway, there's going to be a number on the head of 666 or 666 on the palm. I think that will become the modern day credit card. For them, if you don't have that number, you're not buying or selling. And in a sense, you wind up not being able to eat or to drink or to do anything that requires money. And so it's a starvation tactic. And people will buy into it. They'll be under this great delusion that this person who has now resurrected the political element which came out of the sea, now he will add to this a religious element that makes it sound also wonderful. And in reality, for the Christian, it's the worst thing because they're not going to take the mark in either place. And so that basically concludes chapter 13.